Let's go ahead and open to Numbers chapter 3, verse number 39, where we broke off yesterday. We are looking at the censuses that are part of the book of Numbers. And in particular, we're interested in the number of Levites who are going to serve full-time God on behalf of the Israeli people as a whole, and the firstborns among all of those Israeli tribes. And so we've seen all the numbers up to this point, except we have not had yet the number of Israeli firstborn. That's going to come up in just a moment. So let's read verse 39. All those listed among the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron listed at the commandment of He Who Is by clans, all the males from a month old and upward were 22,000. And then Yahweh said to Moses, list all the firstborn males of the people of Israel from a month old and upward, taking the number of their names. And you shall take the Levites for me, I am He Who Is, instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the cattle of the people of Israel. So we're seeing here the principle of substitution. When God brought the Israelites out of Egypt, about a year previous to what we're reading here, He saved the firstborns from death during that 10th plague by them putting blood on the doors and having their Passover meal. And so by saving or sparing those firstborn, those guys all belong to God now, technically. But God says, you know what? Instead of all those firstborn males in each family functioning as the priests, functioning as the support personnel to the priests, I'm going to take an entire tribe, the Levitical tribe, the tribe that's related to Moses and Aaron, and I'm going to let them function as the substitute for all of you Israelis. And then something similar happens with all the cattle as well. Every firstborn animal is going to be the Lord's. Now, verse 43, all the firstborn males, according to the number of names, from a month old and upward, as listed, were 22,273. So from those numbers, we see there's 273 more male firstborns among all the tribes than there are firstborn males inside the Levitical tribe. So the Levites, because they're going to be doing service from here on out on behalf of the rest of the tribes to get things kicked off fairly, they need to have some sort of compensation for the additional firstborn among the Israelis that are not inside their Levitical tribe. So verse 44, He Who Is spoke to Moses saying, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle. The Levites shall be mine. I am He Who Is. And as the redemption price for the 273 of the firstborn of the people of Israel, over and above the number of male Levites, you shall take 5 shekels per head. You shall take them according to the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of 20 gerahs. Now, back this time, they didn't have coinage. They have weighted amounts of whatever precious metal we're measuring. In this case, we're talking about silver. So a shekel, if you're thinking about buying power, more than likely references about 2 days' wages. So 5 shekels per head is about 10 days' wages. And so that's what is going to be the fair substitute for the Levites to receive as a group for the 273 firstborn males among the Israelis as a whole. And then what's supposed to happen to the money? Give the money to Aaron and his sons as the redemption price for those who are over. Moses took the redemption money from those who were over and above those redeemed by the Levites. From the firstborn of the people of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. So that's the total of the 273 times 5. Moses gave the redemption money to Aaron and his sons according to the word of He Who Is, as He Who Is commanded Moses. So that's been all resolved now, and everything is balanced out so that the Levitical tribe from here on out will be representative of the firstborns of Israel, and they will serve in their place in the sanctuary of He Who Is. Now, starting in chapter 4, we're going to see the more specific census of the various groups within the Levitical tribe and what their responsibilities are. Because they all don't just generically serve in support. Their groups within the Levitical tribe have specific responsibilities. Chapter 4. He Who Is spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Take a census of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old to 50 years old, all who can come on duty to do the work in the tent of meeting." Now, we have to do a little bit of guessing here about what this age frame is about. 30 to 50, in my opinion, and in the opinions of others that have opined on this topic, probably represents those who do the active hands-on work without needing to be supervised. So they are independent, fully trained workers. Now, there will be those younger than 30 that will be serving, but they have to be supervised, it would appear. They're kind of learning on the job. They're apprentices. And then those over 50 years of age are more than likely the trainers. They are the supervisors, the ones who don't have to do the physical hard labor things, but who are still serving in giving direction to those who are doing the hands-on stuff. And this, by the way, is one of the reasons that in the New Testament Jewish culture, you weren't really considered to be fully fledged, trustworthy adult male until you hit your 30th birthday. And once you hit that 50th, that made you an elder. That made you a part of that older group that is to be looked up to for advice and direction as how things should be done. Verse number 4. "This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. When the tent is to set out, Aaron and his son shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the ark of the testimony with it." So now we're going to see the breakdown procedure, at least in its most generic sense, how they get ready to move on to the next campsite. And the first thing that happens is Aaron, being the high priest, and his sons, being the associate priests, go in and they take down the veil that's in front of the most holy place, the Holy of Holies, the one that divides the place where the ark is from the place where the priests do their duty every day. So they unclip it from the clasps that are above it, and then they drape it over the top of the Ark of the Covenant, or the Ark of the Testimony. They shall then put on it a covering of goat skin and spread on top of that a cloth all of blue. So they're basically getting it wrapped up, ready to move to the next site. So the goat skin goes over the top of the veil, and then over the top of the goat skin goes another blue cloth. And then there is a line here that I had totally forgotten that it was here since the last time we studied. That was 4.5 years ago. And I had picked up on something in the Chronicles that I'm going to bring out to you in just a moment that has governed my thinking about the Ark of the Covenant for quite a few years now. And I've only within the last few weeks been telling you that I believe that the poles were in place on the Ark of the Covenant all the time and may have held the curtains back as a drape pullback as the tabernacle was being utilized on a regular basis. Well, this shows to me that I'd better rethink that, because it says next that they shall put in its poles. So that means apparently the poles were not in place on the Ark of the Covenant except when it was being transported during this Exodus time period. Now, evidently, though, that changed at some point in the future. And I'm going to give you a speculation as to perhaps when that might have been in a moment. Because when we fast forward about 480 or so years to the building of the temple, designed by David at the Holy Spirit's guidance, and then built and dedicated by his son Solomon at the height of his good years as king, the Ark of the Covenant maintained the poles in place. And I know that, and we can know that, because of 2 Chronicles chapter 5, verse number 9, where it says, "And the poles were so long that the ends of the poles were seen from the holy place before the inner sanctuary, but they couldn't be seen from the outside, and they are there to this day." So that verse makes it very plain that from the time of Solomon forward, beyond a shadow of any doubt, the carrying poles remained in place on the Ark of the Covenant, and they even jutted out into the area where the priest did their daily work. And the thing that I've described before would probably apply here, that the altar of incense would be placed between those poles at the dividing line between the Holy of Holies and the Most Holy Place, or excuse me, the Holy Place in the front and the Holy of Holies in the back. And every Yom Kippur, the priest would have to kind of skirt around the ark, or excuse me, around the altar of incense and between it and the one of the poles on either side, and then up to the mercy seat on the Ark of the Covenant. So everything I described to you before was clearly from this 2 Chronicles passage in my understanding of it. But now that we're in Numbers chapter 4 and they're talking about dismantling the equipment of the tabernacle and moving to the next encampment, it specifically says that the poles for the Ark of the Covenant have to be put in. So, when did they start leaving them in place? I'm going to give you a couple of suggestions. One of them may have been when they moved it under Solomon's direction into its permanent position in the temple. And so they just simply left them in place from that time forward. So that's a possibility, and that would certainly match what we see in 2 Chronicles. But I think it's also possible that since the tabernacle was set up on the first day of the first month of the second year of the Exodus, and then it was dismantled, and they moved to several more encampments on their way to the Promised Land, the Ark was not in place until later for the ceremony of Yom Kippur. And so I wonder whether or not, as the first Yom Kippur ceremony was approaching and they were in their encampment, that's when they started leaving the poles in place to make that pathway a little bit easier for Aaron to make his way into the Holy of Holies and in front of the Ark of the Covenant. Just throwing that out there for you to think about as a possibility of merging the understanding in 2 Chronicles with what we're seeing today in Numbers chapter 4, verse 6. Okay, so they've got the Ark of the Covenant all ready to go to the next position. Verse 7, over the table of the bread of the presence, they shall spread a cloth of blue and put on it the plates, the dishes for incense, the bowls, and the flagons for the drink offerings, and the regular showbread also shall be on it. They shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet and cover the same with a covering goat skins and put it on its poles. So a little bit different with the table of the bread of the presence. For the table, they just put that special blue cloth over the top of it. Then they put all the things that would normally be sitting on top of it, on top of that blue cloth. And then they put a scarlet cloth over the top of that. Then they put the goat skin covering over the top of that. And then, verse 8 says, they shall put in its poles. So now it's ready for transport. And this is not going to take very long. They're going to be able to break these camps down really fast. They shall take a cloth of blue and cover the lampstand for the light with its lamps, its tongs, its trays, and all the vessels for oil with which it is supplied. So another cloth, a blue coloring cloth over the top of the menorah. They shall put it with all the utensils in a covering of goatskin and put it on the carrying frame. So there is a carrying frame, which probably has poles that are used to move it. And so they're going to move it from place to place in that fashion with all of the things necessary to utilize it once it's to its next site. Verse 11, over the golden altar they shall spread a cloth of blue and cover it with a covering of goatskin and shall put in its poles. So everything that's in the building, in the shrine building, is now prepped and ready to go. They shall take all the vessels of the service that are used in the sanctuary, put them in a cloth of blue, and cover them with a covering of goatskin, and put them in the carrying frame. And then they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cover over it. So they clean up the altar of sacrifice, get it all the ash out of there. They've secured the fire elsewhere, because remember, it's divine fire ignited by God at the dedication ceremony. So they get that all cleaned, and it's now cooled off. So they wrap it up in a purple cloth, and they put on it the utensils of the altar, which are used for the service there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, the basins, all the utensils of the altar. They shall spread on it a covering of goatskin and shall put in its poles. So when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary as the camp sets out, after that, the sons of Kohath shall come to carry these, but they must not touch the holy things lest they die. These are the things of which the tent of meeting that the sons of Kohath are to carry. So this is where we find out that the Kohathites are the transport team. They don't pack them up ready to go. That's what Aaron and the high priest and his associate priest do. They pack them all up, get them ready to go. Then the Kohathites come in and just lift them up on those carrying poles on their shoulders, and away they go in the procession. Verse 16, Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, shall have charge of the oil for the light, the fragrant incense, the regular grain offering, and the anointing oil with the oversight of the whole tabernacle and all that is in it of the sanctuary and its vessels. So Eleazar, who will be the next high priest, he's the one that makes sure all of the special ingredients move from place to place appropriately. Verse 17, he who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, let not the tribe of the clans of the Kohathites be destroyed from among the Levites, but deal thus with them, that they may live and not die when they come near to the most holy things. Aaron his son shall go in and appoint them each to his task and to his burdens, but they shall not go in to look on the holy things, even for a moment, lest they die. So another reminder, the Kohathites are carriers. They're not packers. The high priest and his associate priest, they're the ones that pack things up, because they're the only ones that are supposed to be working around these items. The Kohathites are just the transport team. Verse 21. Then Moses spoke to, spoke to Moses saying, take a census of the sons of Gershon, also by their fathers' houses and by their clans. From 30 years old to 50 years old, you shall list them, all who can come to do duty, to do service in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the clans of the Gershonites in serving and bearing burdens. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and of the tent of meeting with its coverings and the covering of goatskin that is on top of it and the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting and the hangings of the court and the screen for the entrance of the gate of the court that's around the tabernacle and the altar and their cords and all the equipment for their service, and they shall do all that needs to be done with regard to them. All the service of the sons of the Gershonites shall be at the command of Aaron and his sons, in all that they have to carry and in all that they do, and you shall assign to their charge all that they have to carry. This is the service of the clan of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting, and their guard duty is to be under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. So the Gershonites are in charge of all the soft material, all of the embroidered work that goes over the top of the shrine building and the different layers that go above that, and then all the curtains that go around. So they're going to pack all those things up, fold them, roll them, whatever it is that needs to happen. They'll be putting them on some carts so that they can be moved from point A to point B. They are probably going to be the ones who pitch them back up again at the next site. So they're going to be the tent builders and dismantlers. Verse number 29. As for the sons of Merari, you shall list them by their clans and their fathers' houses. From 30 years old up to 50 year old, you shall list them, everyone who's come on duty to do the service of the tent of meeting. And this is what they are charged to carry as the whole of their service in the tent of meeting. The frames of the tabernacle with its bars, pillars, and bases. So they're going to get the hardware, the rigid three-sided framework. They're going to be in charge of putting it up and taking it down and transporting it. The pillars around the court with their bases, pegs, and cords, and with all their equipment and all their accessories. And you shall list by name the objects that they're required to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of Merari, the whole of their service in the tent of meeting, under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the high priest. So Ithamar is basically going to be overseeing the two clans, Gershon and the Merari clan of the Levitical tribes. These two groups together are going to work under his service to dismantle the entire tabernacle, both the shrine building and the courtyard fence, and pack them up, transport them to the next place, unpack them, assemble them back up together again, and then they'll leave it to the other group, the Kohathites, to bring the holy objects into position, and then Aaron and his sons will uncover all of them and will be ready for service again. So it's all very well organized, and everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Verse number 34. Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of the congregation listed the sons of the Kohathites by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for their service in the tent of meeting. Those listed by clans were 2,750. This was the list of the clans of the Kohathites, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of he who is by Moses. And then those listed by Gershon, same sort of phrasing, we find out, verse 40, there's 2,630 of them between the ages of 30 and 50. And then we go to verse 42, start talking about the Merari, and same age range, 30 to 50. Verse 44, there's 3,200 of them. Verse number 46, all those who were listed of the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of the Israelites listed by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old to 50 years old, everyone who could come to do the service of ministry and the service of bearing burdens in the tent of meeting, those listed were 8,580. According to the commandment of He Who Is, through Moses, they were listed, each one with his task of serving and caring. Thus, they were listed by him as He Who Is commanded Moses. So everything is in place. All the logistics are known to know how they're going to go from their Sinai site. They're going to dismantle everything according to this plan and transport them to the next site, build them all up again, spend whatever amount of time is there, and God is going to just bring them into the Promised Land. Now, we know that even though the original plan was for them to be in the Promised Land by the fall of the second year of the Exodus, they're going to have a sin problem that will stop that from happening. So they're going to spend a total of 40 years in their wandering. And the tabernacle is going to be moved several different times to several different camps during that time. And so this procedure is what's going to be used in that. We got about half a minute left. What we're going to do next is we're going to talk a little bit about the opening part of the book of Leviticus, because it is something that the Levites and the priests were given as a technical manual as to how they're supposed to act in support of God's work amongst the Israelites and how they're supposed to do the sacrifices. And so I invite you to come back tomorrow and we'll kind of talk about some of those sacrifices.